The gift of the word today from Psalm 126, following in our series of the Psalms of Ascent. The song goes like this. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. It was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. Indeed, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears shall reap with songs of joy. Those who go out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, carrying sheaves with them. What picture comes to your mind as we read that song? When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. As I read this psalm, I almost imagine a dream. It almost sounds like a dream. It almost sounds too good to be true. I kind of have this fuzzy image of people laughing and dancing and singing. It seems unreal. Maybe with like a rainbow and some unicorns in there too. It just seems unreal. By the way, C.S. Lewis, he wrote a whole poem about unicorns. And he thinks that the only reason they don't exist today is because they didn't make it onto the ark. But unicorns and rainbows and dancing and singing and joy. It's too good to be true, right? Do we see that? Are you happy? Do you remember the last time you just laughed until it hurt? Do you remember that time when you laughed so hard that you cried? Too often, there's this image of Christians that we're always just happy people, that we always have a smile on our face, and that we always look like we're just doing great. But we know that that's far from the truth as well. And oftentimes in our world, being happy or being content or being joyful is often almost idolized. It's made like the ends that people strive for. If you look, everywhere you look, people are striving for more happiness and more happiness. And today with the technology and the ways that people can travel, and just, there's so many more opportunities. But you hear that more and more people are, there's more depression and there's more sadness. And sometimes the harder we try to be happy, the sadder we are. As I've mentioned before, I've been reading from Eugene Peterson, who's a pastor, one of America's great pastors. And even there's sad news even behind that. Just this week, Christianity Today posted that he has now entered hospice care. You know, he's on at the end of his story. And we mourn, and that's sad. But he is somebody who has contributed much joy and much amazing teaching to the church. And he writes in his book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, speaking of joy, he says, a common but futile strategy for achieving joy is trying to eliminate things that hurt. Get rid of pain by numbing the nerve. Get rid of insecurity by eliminating risks. Get rid of disappointment by depersonalizing relationships. And then try to lighten the boredom by buying joy in the forms of vacations and entertainment. You think that sounds like that'll work? There really isn't a hint of that in this psalm. The psalmist speaks about joy as a real consequence, a real lifestyle that they can live. They look at the Lord's work in the past. They make a mention of that they are filled with joy in the present, in the here and now. And there's also just an anticipation of joy that nurtures that lifestyle. 1 and 2. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Our mouths were filled with laughter and our tongues with songs of joy. It was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. Certainly, this psalm was sung by a Hebrew people. They would have remembered things we've talked about before. Deliverance from slavery in Egypt. Over and over in this psalm and over in the Old Testament, this language of, O Lord, restore our fortunes. The Lord restores the fortunes of his people. Certainly, the Exodus, God's leader Moses, helps deliver his people out of slavery and bondage. They were filled with joy. They were set free from slavery. Fast forward a bit, another slavery happens. God's people Israel gets exiled to Babylon, and they are put to work under a king. They are out of the promised land, and sure enough, they come, and there is a message of hope. We think of the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah, who comfort God's people, who tell them to make a city and make the place flourish wherever they are, but to know that there will be a day when they will be released from exile. And that happens. And certainly these real historical events, these real historical events that people of God can look back to and remember the times of deliverance, the times when their fortunes were restored, when they were able to bring back all the goods from the temple, when they were restored and they had much joy and laughter, and they were journeying on, singing this song. They remember those days, even if in the present they aren't feeling the same way. These historical events that certainly happen, they're also spiritual metaphors. We talk about sin as something that can enslave us. We talk about being in bondage to ourselves. And oftentimes when we do try to find joy and happiness, if we ever do make joy and happiness our end, it can be something that enslaves us as well. So we think about our past. We remember those tough times of being enslaved or being in bondage. We remember the hard times. But we also remember those times of deliverance when God has intervened, when God has set us free, or God has given us his grace. We can say with the psalmist in the present, verse 3, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. Remember, joy is way more than happy feelings. Remember that joy is way more than happiness. I remember this artist who sings, I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Where? Try singing that song in a minor key. It sounds so different. It sounds gloomy. And it reminds me that even when we are feeling low, even when we are stuck in sin or enslaved or really put down by what we see in the media or around us in the world, what's happening to our family and friends, when the world seems so dark, that joy is something that characterizes us. It's a gift from God. Joy is not a requirement for us. Joy is not a requirement, but it's a consequence of being one of God's people, for trusting in him. To be sure, it's part of the Spirit's fruit in our lives. It's a sign of blessedness. But lest we think that joy is a requirement or something that if we don't find ourselves feeling or having, then that means we're doing something wrong. Lest we fall into that mindset, we read about the future of God's faithfulness and how the psalmist here thinks of the future and asks God. Verses 4 through 6. O Lord, restore our fortunes like streams in a dry, arid desert. A lot of times our lives will be characterized by dry, arid deserts. And like streams in the Negev, we ask God for His grace and mercy, for Him to restore our fortunes, for Him to bring us joy. And then verse 5 is really important. Those who sow in tears shall reap with songs of joy. So to be happy, to be joyful, is not to ignore the pain. It's not to numb the pain. It's not to ignore the tears. It's to sow tears. It's to sow in tears. David writes some amazing songs, and he talks about how at nighttime he floods his bed with tears. Think of that language. Every night I flood my bed with tears. David says in another song, tears have been my food day and night. He's gone through some emotional wrecks and some really trying times. And he cries out and he sings about his tears. But you know what's really cool? We talk about God being all-knowing, all-loving, all-caring. You know, God, the one who knows the number of hairs on your head. There's also a psalm that says God knows all of our tears, and He keeps them in a bottle. God counts our tears, and He keeps them in a bottle. I'll just read it, because it's really powerful. Psalm 56. You have kept count of my tossings, O Lord. You put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? In God, whose word I praise, in the Lord, whose word I praise, in God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? We sow in tears. Sowing like seeds, you know. It takes time. It takes time, and we might not always see the fruit of our labor. We sow in tears. I think of praying in tears. We sow in prayer. May we be people who sow in tears and sow in prayer when we see brokenness around us, when we see the empty places where there is no joy, when we remember and imagine the dreamscape of laughing and dancing and what it can be when Lord restores our fortunes. It's those sowing in tears. It's that deep embedded joy. We can sing, I've got the joy of the Lord deep in my heart. We can sing that. We can obey the apostles' instructions to rejoice in the Lord always. This is possible because of our brother, of our friend, of our Savior, Jesus. We can always say, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. Even think about Jesus and the times that He wept on the night of when His friend Lazarus died. And He wasn't even there, but He knew it was happening. He saw the emotions of those around Him, and He weeps. And it's not just a sad weeping. It's almost like this really beautiful, full, emotional weeping, knowing that there's loss, but there's more to come. I think tears and crying is a good sign. Oftentimes in my own life, if I'm really sad or down, I don't cry. I just get kind of hard and cold and depressed. Usually when I'm able to cry, that's when I've softened, and that's when it's actually beautiful. Crying and tears, it's a beautiful, redemptive, softening. The Lord restores our fortunes. Jesus weeps, knowing that His friend Lazarus will be raised from the dead. Jesus cries. It's another night before death. Jesus is weeping, even blood coming from His eyes. He's very distraught. What does the author of Hebrews say? Hebrews 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us not lay aside every weight and sin. Let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder, the perfecter, the author of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Jesus weeps and sheds tears of blood, so distraught with what's coming up. Yet it was joy that sent Jesus to the cross. For the joy that was before him, he endured the cross. For the new life that would be given to mankind, for you and me. In love, Jesus died on the cross for you and me. It was the joy set before him that led him there. And then he rises from the dead. And think about his interactions with his disciples thereafter. The smiles and the joy and the hope. He gives them his spirit. And he leaves them. And today you and I can say these words. The Lord has done great things for us. And we are filled with joy. We can look back on the past and remember how God has been merciful to us, and we can rejoice. We can remember that even in the hard times, when we find ourselves in the Negev, that we can say, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. We can pray, Lord, restore our fortunes, Lord. Give us your joy. We live our lives sowing tears, but we will reap singing songs of joy. And then the last image, we will come home carrying bundles of sheaves, bundles of fullness. The final image of tears I can think of is in Revelation. The new heavens and the new earth, the new Jerusalem, in one sense that we are journeying towards, in one sense that we are singing these songs of ascent as we ascend to. And that's a place where there will be no more crying and no more tears, where he will wipe away every tear. It's amazing. Think on your past. Think of those times when the Lord restored your fortunes. The Lord has done great things for us. People see that. We can say that today. The Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy.